You've arrived at episode 337. Do you know what kinesiology is or how it works? Neither did I until this conversation. If you've had a physical pain problem, symptom, or even illness that has been around for a long time and no one has ever really made it any better, venturing into the world of kinesiology might be a great next step. The world where your mindset, your beliefs, and your emotions meet the actual physicality of the body. It's all explained in this episode, along with how identifying with an illness can hold us back from healing, and more about what both men and women need to know about the energetics of a woman's menstrual cycle. So, let's dive into it.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? It's you, it's me, and we're back here for another deep dive into a topic that is actually going to push the limits of my knowledge, which is going to be nice. Not that I know much about much, but I definitely know not much about what today's guest has to share. Did that make any sense at all? It might, in fact, prove my point. First, though, before we get into it, in 2024, it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. If you want some of that cheddar, scroll down to the show notes below, click the link, and reach out to see if you, me, and the community we've got are the right fit for your emotional eating and health journey. Okay, to today's guest, who isn't too far away from me right now. In fact, we caught up for a smoothie last week in real life, believe it or not. She's based here in Melbourne and actually originates approximately from my hometown, somewhere in the heart of Gippsland. I'd like you to meet Ilana Kazakovich, whom is one of Australia's leading kinesiologists. That's the thing I don't know a ton about. She's also a women's well-being mentor and also a yoga and meditation teacher. But this world of holistic health and wellness is not where she began. Once upon a time, she was an accountant. Oh my God, what a transition. Now though, in her post-accounting ledger life, Ilana is passionate about teaching women how to optimize their energy, step into their power, and live according to their cyclical nature. And that's something I want to get into in today's conversation. She also works with children, and some men too, kind of like me, to assist in shifting their essence, energy, and mindset so they can live authentic, content, and happy lives. Ilana, what's up? Welcome to the show.
So good to chat to you.
I know. It's great that we met first in the real world.
I know. And, you know, our small little town down in Gippsland, we probably live streets away.
I know, but never met there. How weird. But I think we figured out that I went to school with your brother, right?
Yes, my younger brother.
Yeah, it would have been your younger brother.
Yeah, I have to think about that.
Yeah, it's so bizarre how we got connected. Shout out to Liz. Liz connected us. Liz knows who she is.
She did, Liz, and I'm sure she will listen to this episode. So go, Liz.
Yeah, this is evidence of her connecting, her networking. So before we get into it, because kinesiology is definitely something that I'm not highly familiar with and don't have too many conversations about, and not a lot of people ask me about it, I'm guessing that's because either it's a fringe type of area of health and wellness or people just don't know about it. So can we just start with, like, what is kinesiology?
So kinesiology is obviously a holistic health modality where traditionally it has come from a chiropractic background. And traditionally it was formed so that people could actually heal themselves. But before I kind of dive into sort of that or go back in history, kinesiology basically uses muscle testing in a traditional sense. And I'm going to talk about energy at some point. And again, we might park that because you're asking me specifically what kinesiology is. Mm-hmm. And I will give you a definition. But it just means that kinesiology, in a sense, is biofeedback from your body. So your body knows every single thing that's ever happened to you. And we go sort of looking for that root cause as to why you are feeling something that is out of alignment or out of balance, or there's a sense of pain in your body, as an example. So kinesiology is a modality or a tool where you're receiving subconscious information from your body to sort of unblock or bring to the awareness, to the conscious body, what it is that caused that pain, blockage, stress cycle in your body. And I know I put a lot of like, there's a few things there that we might have to go back and talk about.
Yeah, that makes sense. So it's the stuff that you're not aware of that's happening in your body, like not consciously aware of, like, oh, that hurts, or that's a problem there. So it's underneath that level of awareness.
Yeah. And quite often kinesiologists, well, yeah, I'd assume some people will know what we are, and some people will be like, that's a bit woo. And some people will be like, never heard of that.
We love a bit of woo.
Never heard of that term at all. It's basically just information that your body is housing that you're not consciously aware of that might be causing a stress, a pain, or a dysfunction in your life.
Yeah, well, that's easy to understand.
And it's not necessarily woo at all, even though I do use essential oils and I do have sound bowls and sprays and all other things. Really, it comes down to there's energy stuck or stagnant in the body, may have happened in a present time or in a past, like in your past. And sometimes it might even go back to like a past life. We were talking about that before we pressed record.
Yeah, we were.
That hasn't necessarily been, you know, it might be a stress or a trauma that the body is holding on to that hasn't, you know, you haven't felt it, or you've, you know, pushed it aside somewhere, and all of a sudden it's come up to be like, it's causing me an issue. And so someone would come and see me to find out why there's a stress, or why they're anxious, or why they've got a sore back or a sore neck, or why they can't meet the love of their life, or why they're feeling stressed about leaving their job and starting their side hustle, because I work in lots and lots of different areas and topics of health and well-being and life. I have clients that come and see me for lots of different things. But at the end of the day, there's stuck or stagnant energy somewhere in your body that you're unconsciously can't figure out yourself, and I assist you to find out what it is, clear that energy, that vibration, so that you can become the best version of yourself and move into and live the life you want.
Fantastic. That sounds amazing. So that makes a lot of sense to me. Okay, so energy in the body, lots of different parts of it and life. It's interesting the transition from talking about the physical body and people that can't solve problems. So I'm assuming those people have seen physios and osteos and stuff like that. So what were they not able to figure out with sort of that more mainstream physical therapy that you can do that they can't?
The stress or dysfunction or pain they're feeling wasn't caused just by the physical body. It was mental, emotional, or spiritual.
So does that mean most of your work is with the nervous system?
Nervous system, your emotions, or working out your emotions, also your thoughts, so your belief systems as well. Mm-hmm. They would be the main areas. I mean, obviously, there's, as I said, we'll work on energy, which is probably more the spiritual side, like things like chakras, if you've never heard that word before, or auras, the meridians. So if you've mm-hmm. ever done traditional Chinese medicine or had acupuncture or acupressure, that works with meridians. So I'm working a lot with those systems as well as the physical nervous system of the body, so the parasympathetic nervous system or the sympathetic nervous system. But to be honest, most people are coming to see me because there's emotion or mental blocks that might also be linked into, as I was talking about before, the energetic bodies.
Can you give us some examples? Like what's a classic scenario where it's like somebody has this type of mental block, and when they work through it, particular symptom goes away?
So I might use an emotion first. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So yep. For instance, if you are angry and frustrated, or that's a tendency for you to easily be impatient, easily frustrated, easily angry, or someone, you mm-hmm. know, like just gets angry really easily, you might have a blockage in, say, your wood element, which has two meridians, which is your liver meridian or your gallbladder meridian. And quite often, it's not always just that meridian. There could be other things as well, but I'm using that as the example here. And so I might be clearing an acupressure on that line. There could be another emotion that's also reactive to the frustration or the anger that we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. And when we talk through what might cause that. And then underlying that, there also might be, as you talked about, a belief system. So one of the reasons why you might get angry easily or frustrated easily is because you might have a belief that I have to do everything myself because nobody else can do it as perfectly as I can. That might be something that's constantly proved to you, and it's a belief that now you believe that you're, you know, I'm not even going to bother, you know, giving that to a team member or, you know, outsourcing that or doing, you know, eating something else because, you know, it doesn't matter what I do or what I've tried or who I give this to, I'm the only one that can do this perfectly. And I've definitely had that. It's been a belief system of mine. I've come from being a perfectionist myself. So someone would come and see me because they're feeling frustrated and angry. We would figure out that the belief system that they had was, you know, I have to do everything myself.
Yeah.
We would go back in age, and sometimes we would figure out, is it just happening in present time, or have I had this since I was a child or since I was a teenager, or did something happen when I was a young adult, or did something happen when I first had a job that triggered that, you know, I have to do it myself otherwise, or I have to always rely on myself because if I give it to someone else, they never do it properly. Mm-hmm. And we look at clearing that depending on where it shows up in the body or where it shows up in an energy system. So like I was talking about, it might be stuck in a chakra or an aura or a meridian line. And these are just examples because with kinesiology, there's multiple areas that I could give you examples of where I could find this, but it's a podcast and we would be here all day. We went through specifics. But you probably can get a gist that how something back in my past, like having a belief system, can cause, especially over time if we're not aware of it, can eventually lead to an emotion like anger or frustration that kind of becomes my daily way of being. And then if it becomes my daily way of being, if it's there long enough, it then quite often becomes a physical health problem.
Yeah.
So that anger or frustration might then end up living, you know, in your lower back. That's an example.
Yeah, it's a really common problem. People have lower back issues.
Yeah. And obviously every person is unique that comes and sees me because we all have a different blueprint. We've all got different genetic makeup. We all have different parenting styles that we've grown up with as well. Our lifestyles were different. We all have something constitutionally quite often that's like our default. Like for me, it's like perfectionism, anxiety.
Yeah. Is that because those things were related to your survival?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us have grown up in especially homes where our parents quite often did live in a survival way. Mm-hmm. This whole thriving and creating, you know, balanced nervous systems and getting enough sleep and eating really healthy. My parents certainly didn't know any of that. I don't know if yours did.
Yeah. A little bit. Like my mom took us to chiropractors and stuff growing up and naturopaths at different stages.
But from a mindset perspective?
Well, mum was a nurse and, yeah, so not from a mindset perspective. Yeah. I'd say it's changed a lot now though.
Yeah. So a lot of our conditioning quite often happens when we are children.
Yeah.
And early teenage years. And unless we're conscious of our habits, conscious of how we think that then creates our emotions, we can get in that whirlwind of being a certain way and not realizing unconsciously that that's why I have back pain. Or when I do something or when I have an emotional response to something, that's just what causes my back pain.
Yeah.
It's not always just, you know, why have you got a sore back? Like, I mean, obviously if you fall over, it's probably because you've fallen over. But quite often anything physical that's sort of come out of the blue, there's a mental and emotional connection to that.
I'm curious. I've got a question about, say people come in with pain that could be related to a physical situation. So if we use the back example, people now unnaturally sit at desks for extremely mm-hmm. long periods of time in chairs that aren't overly supportive and just don't get up and move or stretch as much as they maybe should. So if they do that for a long period of time, Do you ever work with people, and I'm assuming you do, but then that pain becomes a part of their identity? And I say that having worked with people that are in chronic disease settings, like they've become emotionally and maybe energetically attached to the label of I'm the person that has back pain.
Yes.
And so it's like the kids even refer to, it's like dad always has a sore back.
Yeah.
You know, he always has a sore back. And you can even, the same stuff exists in the food world, which is, you know, oh, I don't eat that kind of food. And everybody knows you don't eat that kind of, you know, healthy food is often the thing that people don't eat. And so they've attached like a piece of their identity. And so the idea of breaking up with the pain, the sore back, or it might be the cancer diagnosis or the endometriosis pain or whatever it is, not that I'm gaslighting anyone from their true experience, but do you find that it's people are attached to it emotionally or energetically in a way that that's just perpetuating the problem, but they'd be lost without it? They wouldn't know who they were without that label?
Absolutely. And I was one of those people. So I used to always be like, if I go and do this, I'm going to get sick. If I'm going to go and do this, I'm going to be tired.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm always tired.
Yeah.
You were predetermining
what was going to happen.
Yeah, I was I wasn't living life because I was predetermining that if I did this or if I did that or if I ate this or I ate that, it was going to cause this to a point where I was going to be tired or exhausted.
Yeah.
But I was also creating that because I was also adding way too much into my calendar every week that also created exhaustion and tiredness and fatigue. And no wonder by the time I got to 30, I had burnout and I had chronic fatigue and autoimmune issues and all of those sorts of things. But part of it was because I was also, it had become my identity.
Yeah. You were repeating the narrative.
Yeah, in my mind.
Verbally and emotionally and in your mind, yeah.
You know, every day when I was making decisions, I was like, oh, my God, you know, I'm going to be tired. Like, oh, I'm going to get sick if I do this. And that's always what ended up happening.
Where can you find the line between attachment to story and identity versus actual biological pain? For someone that's been on that journey for a long time, you can understand why they're bitter and resentful and angry that like this thing always happens to me, you know, and even that sentence, the word always, right? Like how can you figure out where that line is? Where does the physical pain end and where does the story begin?
That's a very interesting question. I've never actually had anyone ask me that question.
Well, good. Maybe that's why people like listening to this show.
Because you're real and honest.
Thank you.
So I think, but it's really interesting, and quite often people come and see me and they have physical pain and then we work on the emotions or that traumatic event or that self-sabotage. And then I ask them, how's the pain now? And quite often it'll be, it's gone or it's reduced by like 40% or it's reduced by this or it's reduced by that. And it doesn't mean that it's not always 100% completely gone, especially in one session, but they have noticed a shift and a difference. Mm-hmm. And while I can't necessarily say to you like 50% of it is physical, I can actually muscle test. The body could probably tell me. That's the beautiful thing about muscle testing, especially if I'm seeing you in person, because I do also work online and I work in person. But if we're working in a personal sense, I would muscle test and be like, okay, if someone actually wanted to know, which, you know, Mr. Scientist here is like, he wants to know specific percentages of what's physical, what's emotional, you know, and what's mental.
My bad.
I'd muscle test it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is probably the most accurate would get from a physical, a person is muscle testing and saying, okay, how much of it is physical, how much is emotional and how much is mental and how much is spiritual?
Mm-hmm. I like this. This is great.
That is probably the easiest way or the most accurate way I could say to you, well, for this person, given they've got this as a back pain, we're using that as an example, that's how I'd break it down for you.
Amazing. I love that.
Through muscle testing. And if you're seeing me online, I would surrogate muscle test for you where, and this probably goes back to what is energy, because we are all energy. Every single thing we do in life takes energy. Us interacting right now takes energy. The food we eat takes energy. But we can also shift energy via other people. And an example of that is also we quite often surrogate energetically for people. So, if someone's going through something or in their life, so whether it's something bad or something good, we might feel amazing because, oh, my God, I'm so excited because, you know, my friend's having a baby or my partner got engaged or I just celebrated 500,000 downloads on my podcast show is turning 5.
We're having a house party. It's going to be amazing.
So you feel that vibration with them. Mm-hmm. Also, if someone's going through a bad time, like you were saying, like you get a cancer diagnosis or someone is sick in your family, you quite often might be thinking about that for a few days, or you're wanting to help them. Like that vibration you're taking on, or you're wanting to help, we call this surrogacy. Quite often we're carrying other people's loads energetically that we don't know. And sometimes we can do that for years until someone comes and sees me and I was like, we need to clear so-and-so's energy because you have been doing this for a really, really long time and you may not know. And I was using that as an example for online kinesiology sessions because it doesn't matter whether I'm physically touching you or I'm muscle testing, I'm using me as a surrogate and muscle testing while I'm talking to you on Zoom or on a phone. People can be like, how did you know? How, like, I can pick up things and they're like, why? You're not even touching me. And proof's in the pudding because I don't know how you know that.
Oh, I want to have a session right now. So curious. Like, this is so interesting. When you say, like, surrogacy through through Zoom and through the internet, like, how are you tapping into that energetic field? Is that just like the universe, ether? Like, yeah.
I will look at the person, or obviously if someone's booked in, they're giving me permission to tap into their field. Because we all have an aura. We all have an energy field.
What's my aura?
Well, auras have 7 layers. We're going to get into all of that.
Okay.
Maybe the next podcast will be on auras, okay?
We'll do a series of 7 of them.
Or on the energy bodies, you know, or the energy, you know, the energy field in terms of, yeah, anyway, another podcast. But the universe is an energy in itself and we're all connected to it. That's why you can be thinking of a cousin and the next thing you know, you get an email or a phone call. Mm-hmm. I can quite often think of a client I haven't seen for a while, all of a sudden one day, and then they book. I'm like, oh, I knew that something was going on for them. Because we're all connected on some level. I'm sure that has happened.
Do you get worn out? Do you get worn out as this like energetic antenna that's just absorbing all of this from the people around you?
No, because one, I love what I do, and two, it's called protecting your energy.
Okay.
Because this is another thing that I'm really passionate about, especially since pandemic and a few things I've been working on the last couple of years, is protecting our energy so we don't surrogate for people. So we're fully in control of our energy field or our aura or our energy bubble, whatever it is you want to call it, you know, 99% of the time. Most of us have grown up giving and receiving, whether it's through words, emotions, exchanging of food, giving and receiving energy for, you know, since we've been born, but we haven't learned how to protect it.
Is that more about conversation about boundaries, like energetic being able boundaries. To communicate boundaries? And
yeah, but part of it is also being like, all right, so I know I'm about to go into a meeting or I'm going to see someone that, you know, can trigger me or I know can trigger me. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to meet someone new I've never met before. Rather than just rocking up, you might think about, okay, so how am I feeling today? All right, where's my energy at? Where am I emotionally? Yeah, some of it might include imagining, you know, you've got a protective bubble around you, but I've also got another technique. Physically, you just place your little tongue up the roof of your mouth. And it's like, okay, I'm protected. So I'm not going to take on anyone's energy. I'm not going to get too caught up with whatever someone might be saying, I'm 100% in my power. I'm 100% being myself. It doesn't mean that you don't react or you don't pick up other people's energy because sometimes you might have to go home and sort of get rid of it too. But it means that rather than going and meeting someone, you know, or getting bad news or receiving great news or like surrogating for other people and you might be doing it for days or weeks, you might only do it for a day because you've being conscious enough to be like, I'm going to a situation that I might be emotionally or mentally triggered by. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go home and clear out whatever I might have just absorbed. And then I'm back being me.
Yeah, right. I'm curious, what are some of those strategies for download that we can all do in our everyday?
to protect ourselves?
Well, just when, like as you were saying there, when you get home and you get rid of what you've just absorbed or picked up.
So some of the beautiful things to release the energy of, whether it's your work day, your kids, whatever it is that's going on in your world, or you've met someone that triggers you, like my dad sometimes. We all have parents at some point
that
probably
triggers. We all get triggered by our parents.
Water.
Okay.
Shower. But you have the intention. Okay, so I'm going to wash off whatever no longer serves me.
Yeah.
Beach, swim, go to the pool, have a bath. Water on any level is a great one. And accessible to most of us in the Western world. Like we can have a bath or a shower, like that's something we can do pretty
quickly. Yeah.
You can also do, obviously, rituals like a grounding meditation, or things like smelling an essential oil can hit your limbic brain, your emotional part of your brain.
Is there any particular essential oil?
I would say pick one that feels grounding for you, because I could rattle off 1,000 and you might not have that at home.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I was just thinking like your like sandalwoods and your cedar woods are very grounding. Yeah.
Or things like lemon. Mm. So citrus is another good one, because it's energy enhancing.
Yeah.
Or anything calming. So obviously like lavender or frankincense, but definitely, your cedar woods, your sandalwoods. Things like tea tree, that's a really good one for protection too. Mm-hmm. And stepping back into your power. So tea tree comes up a lot bringing back control and power. So
good to know.
Grounding on the grass. So if you have grass.
Yes, I do now.
I was going to say, not everyone does, because obviously you can live in an apartment. But usually you've got a park near you. So I would say getting outside. So obviously you have negative and positive ions, and it's just rebalancing that, but also just grounding yourself in nature. But, especially if it's not winter and it's freezing, feet on ground anywhere also is a great way of coming back to yourself and getting rid of any energies that aren't yours. There's obviously meditations you can do if that's your jam. Mm-hmm. Using sprays and things like smudging tools like Palo Santo, sage, you might have a ritual, you come home and you diffuse sage in your diffuser, or you put on an incense stick. There's thousands. I could keep going, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, that's okay.
My go-to is usually water.
Mm-hmm.
So in summertime, I'll go for a swim.
Yeah.
Usually it's a morning routine, but sometimes I do it at night as well. Probably getting into nature or a shower, cold shower generally for me.
Oh, even better.
Because it resets your nervous system.
Yeah.
That's why.
Random fact, that was the most listened to episode of my podcast last year.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me.
How to do cold showers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's episode 23, which was like 4 years ago.
Maybe that's I've actually done it on my podcast too. But, because cold showers reset your nervous system. So if I've had a day – or I feel like I'm just not me, you walk into a cold shower, poof, you'll be back in no time.
Oh, 100%. So picture this, right? Unlocking your potential, conquering emotional eating, and gaining insights directly from a health and nutrition expert such as myself. That's what we do inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group, which is currently free to join. If you've ever felt trapped by food challenges, struggled with maintaining a healthy lifestyle, or yearned for a community that understands the reasons why you've yo-yo dieted for years, then there's a new chapter waiting to be written. And this is your chance to start writing it by joining us all on Facebook Lives, on engaging posts that push you out of your comfort zone and into growth, and Q&A sessions with me. All of this works as a platform to begin changing your emotional eating problems for good. Oh, and also, as a special gift, you receive my transformative How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook. And that's also for free. I get it. Skepticism might linger. You might think, Maddie, I've heard these ads and I'm not sure. Well, at least a quarter of the members inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group have been paying clients of my emotional eating program at some point over the last 3 or 4 years. So if you're not sure, you can post in the group and ask to find out if I'm the real deal or not. It's totally up to you. To join us in the free Healthy Mums Collective and to end your emotional eating and feel good in your own skin and begin that journey, pop down to the show notes below, click the link, and breeze through 3 simple entry questions Join today and let's embark on a journey of growth and empowerment. The link is in the show notes below. I was listening to you as you were talking before about, you know, some examples of things that people have and taking on other people's energy and carrying the load. And that inherently makes me think of mothers, because mums are usually responsible for everything, but nobody's responsible for them.
Yeah.
And so they're carrying everybody's stuff. And I actually had a client today who literally said the words that she was carrying.
Words are powerful. Like,
yeah, totally.
That's another thing that you have to watch out for.
Oh, totally. But she said, yeah, she said she was carrying I forget the actual word, it was like the emotion or the burden or something for a couple of her family members who were pretending like it wasn't really happening. And she said, oh, it's all right, I'll carry it for now. And so, yeah, I think of mums who are carrying everything for everyone all of the time. And then they end up at a stage of life where the kids have moved out and then they finally have a bit of space to work on themselves. And even trying to do good things for themselves, whether it be eat well or go to the gym or whatever it is really difficult because they're so trained into caring for everybody else but not themselves that even, you know, beginning to care for themselves in any kind of way or let that energy go is just so disconcerting and off-putting. So I remember I mentioned in the intro this working with women in a cyclical nature. Is there a part of that cyclical nature where people are better off in that cycle to begin this kind of work or start offloading as opposed to a different part of the cycle?
No, I don't know, and I don't know how much time we have to go into cyclical energy, because I'm assuming some of your listeners might understand the cyclical nature of cycles in general. So if you don't, women generally have a four-week energetic cycle because of their menstrual cycle. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say specifically that there is one particular point in that cycle where we need to begin. Is that kind of what you're meaning?
Yeah, well, I know that from exactly what you're saying there is that generally women obviously who are cycling or in menstrual years, they have a four-week cycle, but I know that it's far better that we introduce maybe a bit heavier workouts or more intense food regimes in sort of your weeks 1 and 3.
Yeah.
But weeks 2 and 4, it's, you know, it should be, you know, 2 is obviously ovulation, 4 is the week that cravings go through the roof. So trying to be really strict with your diet then is probably not a good idea, right? Yeah. So I'm curious if there's any kind of sort of pairing to that kind of idea that it's like there's certain times of the menstrual cycle that it's better for women to venture into this space and talk about this stuff and start letting it go versus other weeks of the cycle.
So every week also, like you were talking about, it's good to do different exercise. It's also we crave different foods on different weeks depending on which week of our cycle we're in. We also have different emotions that usually get, I don't want to say triggered, but we can feel different emotions depending on where we are, depending on our hormones, mm-hmm. which also quite often dictates then what we crave.
Yes.
It's all interlinked. So energetically, I would say if you're wanting to start to tap into or maybe have more awareness around how, this cycle, I want to really track energetically how I am or how I feel. I'm also going to backtrack. So weeks 1 is generally menstruation, so days 1 to 7. And most women quite often feel most tired, I'd say days 1, 2, 3, 4. And it's like a winter cycle. So in winter, we quite often feel like hibernating. We don't necessarily have high energy levels or have much high motivation. Mm-hmm. Moving into week 2, it's like a spring season. So it's like, woohoo, I'm back. Like, so I would say energetically, if you're wanting to maybe go and see a kinesiologist or start diving into making change in your life, mm-hmm. I would look at week 2.
Right.
If that's kind of what you were meaning, like, because obviously exactly women are cyclical beings. Mm-hmm. Because week 4 is like, leave me alone, don't touch me. You know, energetically, we can get quite anxious at times. You know, we want to literally just hibernate. We're getting ready to hibernate, really. It's like autumn, you know, we're dropping leaves. We're wanting to hibernate. We want a bit more comfort. So I would say spring.
Gotcha. Spring and week two. Week two,
because week 3 would then obviously be ovulation and woohoo, let's go have a party. But then hopefully you're on board for that party or that new way of being or that new way of thinking or that new habit or whatever it is that you're wanting to move or change or grow in your life, you kind of make week two is about planting seeds, you know, getting organized, setting intentions. It's kind of like new beginnings, new chapter. And every single week has, I suppose, a different theme. That would be week two.
It sounds like to me that this should be a part of all medical conversations for people, in the sense that there's always going to be energy involved. There's always going to be emotions involved and beliefs involved.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's not?
Because most of our society was created, I suppose, or, you know, the power is with males. And males' energy is pretty much same day in, day out.
Oh, my God, I wish I was.
I wish I was that stable. They do have a cycle as well. And I think men, it really depends. It's really dependent on the male, also dependent on their personality. But hormone-wise, if we're talking hormone-wise, it doesn't change. Like, it doesn't have a 30-day cycle.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's also why men are researched more in medical, in the medical world, more than women are probably too. But
well, it'd be very practical. It's like we can, you know, if we're to study a woman on one cycle, that's a whole month of time.
Yeah, it costs a lot of money. I get
which is not much data because it's one cycle. So it's like we need to do this study for 3 years.
You know, I would love, one of my passions before I had children and before the pandemic was to try and get into corporates and, you know, sort of share with CEOs and boards that, you know, if you want to accommodate or allow women to thrive in your workplace, you need to look at X, Y, and Z because you're missing like a lot of how we tick and talk.
So going into that, like what are maybe the men of the world missing? And possibly the women too, because they're in this world where it's like, you know, being the same every single day. Yeah.
Like a lot of this information, I have people that come to a workshop that's about seasons, and some of them are like looking at me like, why was I not taught this in high school?
I've even had that in my own programs, and I'm a man teaching women about their cycle, and it's like people are like, wow, I didn't even know that. But what are people missing? What are the things, the crucial things that men could have better relationships with their wives, women could have better relationships with their husbands, if they understood some of this stuff? And then, of course, the CEOs and businesses that would also be beneficiaries.
Well, women generally have an energy cycle that's around 28 to 30 days. So their energy is not the same every day. It changes based on which hormone is most dominant.
Mm-hmm.
Also, obviously, women have different life cycles. So sometimes, you know, CEOs and boards are expecting the same of, you know, a 50 or 60. And I mean, we all age, but we actually go through, I mean, we go through a cycle, like with our actual menstrual cycle. Like men don't go through menopause.
Yeah.
So, you know, that hormone cycle that changes, and being really mindful of a woman's age and where she's at and those kinds of things. And, you know, also that women are quite often not, obviously, more emotional beings than men too. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily a weakness.
Not at all.
And not a lot of people see emotions as, or it's been taught even, you know, when we were kids, like it's like, don't cry, you know, be strong, don't cry. But emotion is actually power.
Yeah, and it's the movement or detoxification in some instances of energy.
Absolutely. Yeah, so they're probably the main things that I mean, there's obviously others that I could bring to the table as well, but it's, you know, don't be scared of emotion. You know, understand how women's biology actually works and start to work with it, not against it, because a lot of women don't understand. So they make, like, they're being hard on themselves, you know, even from a mental perspective, and then they're self-sabotaging because, week four, eat the chocolate bar, honey. It's really not going to make a difference. But it's week four. In weeks two and three, you're not going to touch the stuff. So why am I being so hard on myself in week four when I'm eating a little bit more chocolate? You're human. A lot of women do it. Let go of that self-sabotage.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. As long as it doesn't just continue on an addiction that already exists.
No, but because really, if you have a stable, if you have stable blood sugar, for instance,
yeah,
if you understand your emotions on a cyclical basis and you know that that week you're going to crave a little bit more, you're going to be less harsh on yourself because you know in a few weeks you're not going to crave it at all.
Interestingly, that's the most common week that women give up diets.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
Because they're trying to implement what worked, you know, 2 weeks ago very easily in
week
four.
That's not going to work in week four.
Yeah, it's too much. It's too intense. No. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. This is an interesting conversation. I mean, I think the whole world, including women, can benefit from understanding their cycle a little better. Question, which maybe gets a little woo-woo for some people. Do you believe that the female menstrual cycle is connected to the moon?
I mean, I'm not sure. From the research, it's been very conflicting that it's actually completely true. But we are all connected to universe.
Mm-hmm.
We also get affected by the tides and the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like because, you know, females quite often have that more, we have that intuition ability that a lot of men aren't inherently born with.
Damn.
Because we have a uterus and because we actually birth babies like every other species on the planet, there is that tie-in with the moon, the sea, and what's going on energetically.
Yeah. What's that? You referenced the uterus there. Is that because that is the source of creation?
Yeah. Whether you birth children or not,
mm-hmm.
if you have a uterus, you have that innate connection intuitively to things around you
mm-hmm.
quite often. And, I mean, it's a general sense that quite often women are more conscious of things, especially from an emotional sense than a lot of men, because we do. We have that. We were born with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm jealous. I need some more of that.
But men obviously can learn to harness their third eye, their intuition, their wisdom.
Yeah.
Through other practices. And a lot of women don't use this beautiful tool that we have because it's inherently been, I suppose, as a society, we're not necessarily very good at allowing people to listen to their intuition or make free choice or have structures that work for them innately.
Yeah.
Because as a society, you know, we've been taught we've got to be at school at 9, you know, we've got to go to school. And, you know, there's all these things that sort of take away that freedom and that power to listen to our intuition because
yeah.
a lot of us don't often want to go to school. Or want to learn in that way.
I'm curious, how do you know if your intuition was carved or designed as a response to trauma? Because it's very difficult sometimes to, like, in, you know, we've probably all been exposed to it or done it ourselves, where we had a gut feeling about something, an intuitive feeling, and then after 5 years of therapy, you look back and think, oh, I was just responding to trauma. Like, obviously that was my conditioning. Like, yeah, I'm curious where, like, how do you know if what you're doing is truly, and it's probably just a ton of introspection, but yeah, whether what you're doing is conditioned. And I say that because I hear a lot about intuitive eating, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people talk to me about intuitive eating. And most people that are intuitively eating, they're eating pizza and chocolate because their gut is programmed to crave that. And so,
yeah, microbiome has just learned that that's what it wants.
Yeah, totally. So it's like, how do you decipher the difference between intuition and trauma conditioning?
Well, I suppose it's about doing the work and knowing yourself, like ultimately really knowing
mm-hmm.
unconsciously yourself. Because if you really knew yourself on a highest level and you're still craving pizza and chocolate every single day and that was your main diet, I would say, I'm not sure. Because pizza and chocolate isn't a natural thing that's grown, like,
for sure.
Evolutionally wise, if we were meant to eat that, the universe would have created it.
Totally.
Like, it would grow.
I wish there was a pizza tree.
That's my conclusion anyway. Obviously, everyone has their opinion, but it's about knowing yourself, like really and truly, like getting to that point where it's like, is this me talking or is it something else? And for me, the only way I've known that is through, doing the work, seeing kinesiologists, reflecting, doing my meditation, you know, yoga, you know, let's say 10 years, the last 10 years, since when I hit rock bottom with chronic fatigue until right now today, there are certain things that I can be like, yeah, that was conditioning. And that was me also just, you know, now I know that was conditioning and that was like, no, it wasn't.
Well, and arguably that's a journey that happens for the rest of our lives is that if we haven't grown, like maybe a sign that we've grown is that we look back and always say it was conditioning, like for our entire life, because it's like, if we look back and say, oh no, that was right. It's like, maybe we haven't grown since that moment. We haven't peeled back the next layer.
Well, yeah. And when someone comes and sees me, I'm like, you know, I'm not a quick fix. Don't come and see me if you want a one session wonder, because
I relate to that.
You have to peel back layers. Mm-hmm. And every layer is the layer you need today. And that's another reason, like for me, not that I want to say it was conditioning, but for me, you make the right choice today.
Mm-hmm.
If you always make the right choice for today, yeah, some of it might have been conditioning, but you're making the right choice for the future you.
Yeah.
And for the person you want to become. And whatever lesson that you need to learn today, you're going to learn it. And it doesn't matter who you see, but it's going to take one step, one day, one journey at a time. And you just show up and deal with whatever it is that's facing or you're faced with on that day.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. And I take the same approach with my clients. I'm very clear whenever people are inquiring about what I do. I say, sure, we start with this amount of weeks, but we set goals up for a minimum 12 months because you're a human and you're going to go through ups and downs and you want to give up and you might give up for a while and because you are you and that's totally okay. But you've got to actually widen the scope of how long this is going to take or what's involved, because if all this simple stuff worked, you wouldn't need to be talking to me in the first place.
No. And, you know, I feel like we're moving into that era where it's okay also to ask for support.
Yeah.
Because that also was a thing, you know, oh my God, I'm in therapy. Oh my God, I'm seeing someone. Like
now it's like if you go on a date and somebody says they're in therapy, you're like, oh, thank God. Like,
yeah, like, absolutely. I'd be like, yeah, you're my person, because
totally
you're working on yourself, you're showing up and trying to be the person that you want to be, and you're looking at things that are blocking you or holding you back, or may have been conditioning from your past, or trauma from your past, but you're not being like, oh, that's my past, I don't want to look at it, and then this stuff keeps coming up or these eating patterns keep happening or I end up in the same situation over and over again. You're like, oh, okay, I'm going to open that door and see what's happening and see what's in there, and I'm going to look at what works and I'm going to ditch what doesn't.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. So where can people find you online or in the real world to get more of this juicy kinesiology?
So you can find me at my website, alanak.com.au. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook, alanak.kinesiology. My podcast is The Energy Shift, so go and check me out. This special human I'm talking to will be on the show very soon, so you can come and listen to him there. They're the main places you can find me.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, just to clarify, Alana is with an I. It's I-L, Ilana. So that everybody knows what they're searching for. Anyway, I'll put all of the links down in the show notes below. So scroll down there, get involved, and tell me about it, because I've never been in this world. I want to know about this. Anyway, what is one piece of health information that you want everybody to know more about, of all of the things that you know?
Well, for today, because it might change if it was tomorrow, I would say the cyclical energy of women.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the energy.
Yeah. Good. I like it.
And probably understanding your energy as a human being in general, not just women. I'm going to change it now. But, you know, waking up in the morning being like, oh, how do I feel today? Where is my energy? What do I feel like doing? Or what does it feel right for my body? Because we have, as a society, I feel like, just stopped intuitively listening in to where we're at, how we're feeling, and what we need.
I like it. All right. Well, thanks for hanging out. I'm going to put all your stuff in the show notes below. Everybody head down, get involved. And otherwise, we're going to catch you on the next episode really soon. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast. Simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.